Ads, schmads. If you don't want ads, that's okay. Choose the Dave McWilliams Plus option on Apple Podcasts. And hey presto, no ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
To understand the economy, you have to understand human nature.
This podcast is powered by Acast.
How are you doing there? Time for the podcast, and I am going to talk to you about an experience I had last week, which was Stop that, John.
He's lying on the couch now.
Exactly.
Tell me about your experience.
Yeah. Well, when I was a young boy, I was in, as you know, John, Florence the other week.
Yeah.
One of the...
Didn't bring back anything, by
not
the way.
Not even a rock. Not even a rock.
Stick a rock.
Not even a quote from Dante. But I had a really interesting opportunity, and I know this is going to actually not excite you, but I'm going to tell you nonetheless, right? You remember the book,
I'm sure it
The
will.
Merchant of Prato,
yes.
Right? And remember I was talking about the merchants in the medieval ages,
yeah,
and when capitalism begins to become formed and in companies and whatever, and the basis of it was the ledger.
Yes.
The double entry,
entry
bookkeeping, yeah, right? And the mathematics of Fibonacci, right?
For all you accountants out there.
For all you accountants out there, this is a big up for accountants.
Sharpen your pencils.
Sharpen your pencils. So I was in the library of a very old, wealthy Florentine family last Tuesday night. You're going to love this. I'm going to upload on Twitter a photo of what I was looking at,
right,
which was a ledger. Right?
Right?
From the 15th century. I was fascinated by this, right? Yeah. Of all the pluses and minuses, the comings and goings of a small company.
Right.
Of which there were many companies of this merchant family who were in cahoots with the Medici, right?
Right.
And what fascinated me was just the level of detail and how accountancy worked back then and how they used accountancy to ring fence certain companies. So they'd have a company, they'd have a balance sheet, they'd have a double entry balance sheet, there was pluses and minuses, and then they'd close off the venture and they'd start again.
Right.
And it was all this extraordinary communication they had between people in Marseille, between people in Barcelona, people on the Balearic Islands, of course, all the way as far north as Bruges and London, all out of Florence. Now, I found that fascinating.
Yeah.
And of course, it is for researching for this upcoming book on money.
Yes.
So I wanted to make sure that I got the Florentine bit right. So I mooched out of that place thinking that was fascinating. And then I was thinking about those families in Florence and how they seemed still to be rich 500 or 600 years later.
Mm.
And luckily, the Bank of Italy, John, not a bank that you would necessarily put all your, let's say, eggs in that particular nest, okay, have a very, very interesting economic research department, right? And they've always had, remember I told you, I learned most of my monetary economics from Italian economists in Bruges, right? So the Italians have been very, very brilliant at monetary economics. And there was a fantastic paper written about 4 years ago on this very issue by a guy called Barone and another fella called Moretti. And they wrote, and they found something fascinating, which was using tax data from the 15th century. So 1427. Now imagine how old we're talking about.
Yeah.
Just after the Black Death.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, 1427, census and tax data from Florence. And then they looked at, because we know that, of course, family names come down the father's side in Christian societies. So they looked at the names in 1427, who was paying tax and who was rich. Then they looked at the names in 2008 of who was paying tax and who was rich in Florence. And they found something extraordinary, which was The top 20 families in Florence in 1427 were almost the same top 20 family names of people who were paying most tax in Florence. In
same families?
Same family name.
Right, okay.
So imagine what they found, which is that if you use this data, given that family name goes down the father's side, so it indicates a lineage from 500 years ago, and you look at the data from 500 years ago, what they found was the people who were rich in Florence, the people whose ledgers I was looking at, are still rich today, 500 years later.
That begs the question, what business were they in?
So,
and are they in the same business?
Now, fascinating, right? They were members, the business they were in 1427, they were members of the Shoemakers Guild.
Okay.
They were members of the Silk Guild, either merchants or weavers of silk. They were members of the Wool Guild, either manufacturers or, again, buyers and sellers of wool. Mm. They were either lawyers or they were bricklayers, sculptors, stonemasons, and stoneworkers.
It's all making sense now. That's why the Italians are so dapper.
That's exactly, exactly. This is why, and it's fascinating you say that, right? In the 14th century, the Italians were the epicenter of global couture, haute couture.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they still are.
Yeah,
and they absolutely still are, right? So I found that, you know, so there I was in Florence and I went to a cafe and I'm probably the only person in Florence who goes to a cafe and reads Bank of Italia research papers. After, rather than watching, you know, Serie A.
And you get security, we've got a 394.
We've got a weirdo in the back, right? So then I was thinking to myself, this is fascinating because typical economics, or the traditional economics idea is that in terms of family wealth, right, the first generation make it, right? The second generation consolidate the wealth and the third generation piss it away. Right.
Okay.
So that's always the way you see it. So little rich kids piss away their parents' money, right?
Yeah, yeah,
you see that all the time.
But what does this tell you about?
This tells us that's not the case. This tells us something else is going on.
Right.
Right? That in actual fact, wealth in Italy, and fascinatingly, they also did work for wealth in Sweden.
Okay.
So, and
I was going to say, was it a cultural thing? Was it an Italian thing?
They did for wealth in Sweden. And again, they used the same idea. They used tax data from the 17th century in Sweden and then tax data now to see were the same families rich. And in Sweden, the evolution of family names is fantastic, right?
Mm.
So in Sweden, there are three types of family names. Very rich people in the medieval ages were named after the estate they owned.
Right.
So named after a house, right? Or after the estate they owned.
Yeah.
The next came up were artisans and they were named after their trade, like Cooper, Carter, Thatcher, Miller in English.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the third were peasants who were named after their dad,
right.
Anderson, Jakobson, etc.
Yeah.
Right?
Where did IKEA come into that?
IKEA, it's the, what's it called? The Wonderful Every Day. What's it called? Isn't it? The Wonderful
The House of IKEA.
The House of IKEA. Actually, I'll talk to you about IKEA and dyslexia. There's a very, very clear relationship between very brilliant entrepreneurs and dyslexia. And the guy who set up IKEA is one of them. But that's for another podcast.
Right.
For another podcast. But it is a fascinating one. But so go back to my idea of family.
The spelling is all wrong, is it?
Yeah, exactly. That's your IKEA. Yeah.
Anyway, go on.
See what he did there? Anyway, so in Sweden, you have these three types of names. And of course, you can look at now, were the people who were rich back then still rich now, you know? And so Anderson being the classic Swedish name,
yes,
the son of Anders, right?
Yeah.
Which is a peasant name. And then you would have a person who was named after their trade, for example, a miller would be an artisan. And then you'd have the posh guys who named after a state. And what is something extraordinary is that hundreds of years later, in 2008, people whose surnames indicated their great grandparents were members of the Swedish nobility back then were drastically more likely to be members of the Swedish financial elite than people with the surname Anderson today.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
Wow, yeah.
Isn't that really amazing, right? So what you see is that the contention that inequality is a temporary phenomenon may not be the case, right? And the reason it may not be the case is because what you see in Florence and in Sweden, you see where you have data available that there is a long-term trend of people who were rich holding on to their money. Now, the reason this is important, John, is because if you think inequality, permanent inequality is incompatible with democracy.
Yeah.
And if you look at what pisses people off about inequality, it's not that you can go from poor to rich in a society, so the society can be unequal.
Yeah.
It's if the rich can't get poor, right? So that's okay, the key. So right. If you start poor and then you get rich, the society is unequal because you've actually done better in one generation. What really annoys people is if you end up being rich and you stay rich and you can't get poor.
Yeah.
And what you see in the Swedish and the Florentine data is that is actually the case. And one thing fascinating in Florence in particular is that the very rich seem to understand this over the years and they gave back a huge amount to Florentine society. So they built orphanages, they built the civic works, they built all the public buildings, were all built with private money. So it was as if that was their insurance policy so that the revolution wouldn't happen.
And that kind of thing, that kind of altruism is not happening now?
Exactly. This is where I want to go. Okay. This is where I want to go. So rich Irish people now become tax exiles.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
And the worst thing is they cheer each other. They're down in Portugal, in the south of Portugal.
Yeah.
Laughing at everybody else while they're playing golf, saying, I got out, I made 100 million, and then I went to Portugal for a couple of years and I avoided tax. Whereas that didn't happen in Sweden and or in Florence. So the rich people in these countries said, we're going to stay rich, but the price of this is we're going to give back. So we're going to fund museums, we're going to fund this, that, and the other, right?
But how did, hang on, can I just stop you there? How and when and why did that kind of mentality change? I mean, I'm just thinking, as you're talking about paying tax and stuff, recently, wasn't it Ancelotti, the manager of Real Madrid, has just been done for tax evasion. Messi was the same. You know, there was, and especially the kind of South Americans in particular.
Like the way you whispered there, it was like the way my mother used to remember divorce in the 80s. That lady is divorced.
Yeah, those South Americans.
Those South Americans.
No, but
forget the South Americans. Think about the Paddies.
I know, because it comes back to that phrase that you used before. And actually, in fact, it was Martine Lestaux used before as being, you know, great patriots, but shit citizens. And part of being a citizen is paying your bloody tax.
Yeah, exactly. So, but let's come back to why it might be the case.
Yeah.
That over the very long term, wealthy families remain wealthy. Why could that be the case? Now, the Bank of Italia fellas, as I was sitting in the back of my cafe reading, they put it down to a lot of things, right? They say, it's not unusual for the kids of the professional class to attend elite institutions, education institutions, grind schools here being a very good example,
where
you replicate the privilege, right? And it's not you replicate the privilege, it's just your parents trying to do good by their own kids. I mean, this is, again, very natural. We'll never arrive at this because it poses a big dilemma for families or whatever. You know, you think, for example, in Ireland, like political careers, like the Healy Rays, these are political dynasties.
Yeah.
You have those, you know, Fianna Fáil have their dynasties, Fine Gael have their dynasties, Labour have their dynasties. The amazing thing about Ireland is even the left wing have their dynasties, right? And of course, the Healy Rays are kind of populist dynasties, right? But it replicates down. You have what they would call in Ireland legal families, medical families,
where it's
actually passed on, right? So it's not just about the income. It's about the culture of the family. It's about the incentive structure in the family. And basically what you have is that they necessarily replicate themselves. That's number one. Of course, the other thing is it's real estate is unbelievably important. Social connections, dare I say it, a common gene pool that they marry each other. Rich people tend to marry each other and that reinforces the money.
Well, that's just opportunistic, you know, because you've an opportunity to meet like-minded people or...
It's true, but do you see what I mean? So it's this idea that connections and elite status and all that. So what it means is that economists who blithely say, don't worry about inequality because it washes out over the generations are wrong. What you actually see is it actually tends to reinforce. It's not all the way and not every case. And it doesn't mean that one generation can lose out or whatever, but there is a sort of a repetitive structure. Now, the reason this is important is that last week, John, Knight Frank is a real estate company, and yeah. they've got these things called wealth reports, and it's yeah. a report on inheritance. And it says that today's affluent millennials, the people who are tend to complain about being locked out of the housing market, and they can't get a job, and blah, 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 they are set to be the most, this is a quote, to be the richest generation in history worldwide.
Wow.
Because they are going to inherit so much from their parents.
Yeah.
So much, which then entrenches this inequality in the system. The inequality that we have seen over the years.
Yeah. Yeah, but hang on a sec, Macker. You know, there is one way of...
Or you, just you. Fucking, you hang on. You get the drinks. You sit down. I've got something to say.
I have something to say. But, like, inheritance, the whole idea of inheritance, it's a natural thing for any parent...
Yes.
To want to see their child, their son, their daughter do well. And, you know, I want to give them a leg up. I want to make sure that
you're
they're,
absolutely
first
right.
of all, that they're healthy. And second, that they're educated well. And third, if I just, you know, there's your bus fare to get into town at the very least. Or, you know, there's a piece of land to do something with.
There's your Uber account.
People do that. But you know what I mean?
Well, no, you're absolutely right.
You give them anything. And I know then it goes to...
This comes back to our paradox of aggregation, John.
Yes.
What is
yes.
good for the individual is not always good for the collective. So you're absolutely right. We all want this, right? Which is, why do you work? Why do you try to do well? Why do you try to accumulate? Why do you try to make sure everyone's secure? It's simply to try and pass it on. So yeah. you've got this as a natural familial human urge, yeah. right? Is to try set people up.
But it's not even just human. It's a biological urge.
It's a biological urge, right?
The selfish gene and all
that.
And
then you have on the other side, you have this collective notion, whereas how do you square that with the rest of society, with those people? And I mean, and again, this is why this is interesting, because it pits notions of perfection against notions of good. Remember this, let's quote Gramsci,
yes,
a lovely Italian communist. Why we're talking about Italians.
Yes,
Gramsci was this idea, you shouldn't let, I think it was actually Rousseau, the French fellow, came up with it first, right?
Right.
You shouldn't let the perfect bully the good.
Absolutely.
So if things are going the right general direction and you look at somewhere like Florence and you say, well, they didn't do too badly after all their years of wealth inequality. In fact, the place is a pretty civilized place. You know, is that better than smashing it all up and starting again and forcing people to be sort of communist or forcing people, you know, it's the Pol Pot approach that you kill everyone with glasses, in which case you'd be killed. Pol Pot killed everyone with glasses.
I know. It's just bizarre.
Right?
Yeah.
You take that sort of...
Or Stalin killing his doctors.
Killing his doctors, because he killed all doctors because he was suspicious of his own doctor, right?
Yeah.
So that's one approach. Or do you say, look, you know what? The society is getting gradually better. You take the Edmund Burke approach to things, sort of traditional conservative, Burkean conservatism. Mm. Edmund Burke, who stands outside Trinity College, big, big monument to a very big thinker who Irish people don't think about very much, right? For a variety of reasons. But so you're right. So it's a conflict. But let's look at the situation in Ireland, because the figures are quite shocking about wealth inequality.
Well, I tell you what, let's do that and also look at what alternatives there are and how do you actually achieve equality of some sort.
Of some sort.
Yeah.
Or of opportunity, which is what all the right-wingers say. Right-wingers always say, I'm not about equality, I'm equality of opportunity.
Right, yeah.
Level that playing field, right?
Let's talk about that after a bit of this.
Grant.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mac, we're looking at inequality and inheritance.
And wealth divide. Yeah.
But let's just go back a little bit first. Back when we were sprogs, 70s and 80s.
The Asian 70s and 80s.
Here's what it feels like sometimes.
I know. But your bag, by the way?
Everybody was more or less on a par. There was a few kind of wealthy families, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, there was an awful lot more equality, I think it's fair to say.
In Ireland, yeah.
In Ireland. But inequality has grown enormously. And the disparity between rich and poor has grown enormously in the last 40 years.
It has,
While Ireland's economy has boomed and we've all done great, in general, you know, Ireland is one of the richest countries in the world per capita.
Per capita, yeah.
Now, but also the disparity between rich and poor and inequality has grown enormously.
It's really very, very stark. I'll give you a couple of figures. I did a program about 8 or 9 years ago now called Ireland's Great Wealth Divide on RTE because I was interested in this. And
we looked
at the figures. But the wealthiest 1% of Irish societies, 1%, right, now owns more than a quarter of the wealth. So 1% of people own 25% of the wealth of the country, which is kind of phenomenal. The top 10% of households own over half the wealth in society. And the top 30% own 80%. Now that means the bottom 70% own only 20% of all the wealth of the country.
That's phenomenal.
So it's unbelievably skewed. So all economics talks about income inequality. That's the big nirvana. It's the Gini coefficient. How do you bring that down? In the case of Ireland, the tax system works very, very hard to tax people's income very high and give people a break whose income is very low. It works very, very hard to do that. But income is only one reflection of a stake in society. The other reflection is wealth. And wealth in Ireland is much more unevenly distributed. Mm. And of course, the main way people get rich in Ireland is through houses. So it's your primary residence, or secondary, or tertiary, it's real estate, right? So an amazing statistic, again, in Ireland is that Oxfam, right, indicates in a recent report that at a combined income of 15 billion, Ireland's top two richest people, two, have more wealth than the bottom 50%.
Where'd they live?
I'll tell you where they live exactly. You see that around the corner, up to right, okay. Getting the 46A, you know, right, okay. But interesting, where do they live? Abroad.
Right, yes.
You go back to the idea that they're not doing what the Florentines were doing, which is like, we're really rich, let's put it back in. Mm. So the bottom 50% of Ireland have a combined wealth of 10 billion euros. The two richest people own 15 billion between the pair of them, right? So this is where you begin to see that inheritance begins to disorder. But see, that's really extreme, right?
Yeah.
What's more interesting is like your top 30% owning 70%. That's much more because that becomes material for society.
Yeah.
It's like everything. The very, very out of sight rich, nobody cares about them in a way. You mean you can care about them, but it's so extreme.
Yeah.
But it's this idea that in the middle, what you have is you have a society which on a wealth basis is profoundly unequal. And as we've seen in the Florentine and Swedish case, this may well endure over generations and generations and generations. And if it does, that's what pisses people off. It's not that you can be poor and you can do well through your own smarts. It's the fact that if you're dumb and rich, you can stay rich. And one of the dilemmas then for very rich people is they tend to hoard wealth.
Yeah.
They don't spend wealth. Remember, I've come back to this. So if you think of a billion being 1,000 million, for a society, it's far better if 1 million people have 1,000 euros than one person has 1 billion. Because that 1 million people will spend their 1,000 euros. Or it's even better for 1,000 people to have 1 million than one person to have 1 billion for this society and for the economy, for innovation.
Does that mean that inflation would go up then if everyone had...
Inflation would go up. But I mean, again, the interesting thing about inflation, if inflation is rising because the velocity of money is rising, the amount of spending is rising, then that's good. That's really good. Because inflation is an indication of energy and stuff going on.
Right.
The problem is that all these wealth managers, like our friend Knight Frank, yeah. they exist because what they're doing is they're hoarding the money of rich people.
Yeah.
That's their job.
Yeah.
Of course, the thing about money is when you don't have it, you want more of it. And when you do have it, you want to make sure nobody else gets it.
Yeah.
Right? This is the sort of the weird dilemma. So the whole wealth industry is basically squirreling away money of very wealthy people out of productive investment and into savings. And what we know about savings is no country ever got rich by saving alone. What you need to have is spending and investment and risk-taking and all that sort of stuff.
Okay. So then if we were to address the inequality and try and even things out,
yes.
as it were, like, is that possible with this current political and economic system that we have in the West?
Well, I have both good and bad news for you, Johnny Boy. Good and bad news. There's a book I was reading as I was sitting in Florence on the Bank of Italia's website reading about inequality and familial intergenerational wealth was a great book by a guy called Walter Scheidel. Now, Walter Scheidel is an Austrian-born American economic historian.
Mm.
And he's written amazing books. One is actually called Escape from Rome, if you want to actually read about the fall of the Roman Empire, the economics of it.
Right. Is that the sequel to Escape from New York? Kurt Russell movie. Fantastic.
No, Escape to Victory.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
No, this is called The Great Leveler, right? And you will love the title of this. This will really invigorate you, give you some vim. It's Violence and the History of Inequality from the Stone Age, John, to the 21st century.
Read of ledgers from back then.
So that's a pretty unambitious title from the Stone Age, right? But it's a great read, right? But in summary, what he says is that inequality will remain with us and wealth inequality absent these four factors, right?
Right.
So what really helps inequality is war, right?
Right, okay,
might
right.
help anything else. So for example, if you look at the European data, European wealth inequality collapsed after the Second World War. But it collapsed after the Second World War because all the assets of the rich were destroyed, particularly around Central Europe, particularly around Germany. So war, good. War, bad for people.
Yeah.
Good for inequality.
Right, okay.
The next one is revolution.
Okay,
right?
Same thing.
Stalin got rid of 100 million people, but screwed the rich, okay?
Yeah.
Revolution, bad for people, sometimes good for inequality. The third one then is total societal collapse.
Right.
So if you're really going back to history, the Mayans and the Aztec collapse, right, or the collapse of the Roman Empire. That's great for inequality, but it's not good for everybody else.
Right.
And the final one, of course, is plagues. Plagues, very, very good for inequality because they destroy the social fabric of society, right? But for inequality.
You've just named four things that are on the horizon at the moment.
You know, the four horsemen of the apocalypse, John.
There you go. We have Putin. We have the Ukraine-Russian conflict. We have Gaza, Israel. So that's your war. We have rising revolutions in all across Europe with the rise of the right wing.
Yeah.
We've had
total societal collapse here in Dunleary.
I'm sure that's in the Post. And we've had plagues of COVID.
And we're going to have another one.
And there will be another one, no doubt, of some sort or
other. This is a really joyous and uplifting podcast,
God.
John. You know, the weirdest thing about inequality is it doesn't die peacefully.
Okay.
You know, the whole idea is that you want to die peacefully inside your own scratcher.
Just wanted some good news, man.
Right. You're not getting good news today. Get away from your good news, right? So what we see is without what we call mass mobilization war, not little skirmishes, but mass war, right? Without total state collapse, like the Akkadian state or the Egyptian state years and years and years ago, right? Without very extreme violent revolutions or without extreme plagues, they're the only things that destroy the wealth of the rich permanently. So you basically, and this comes back to your original question, what is the alternative?
Yeah.
Is the alternative you need violent, catastrophic social change in order to rebalance the books? And if that is the only alternative, is it worth doing? Is it actually worth doing? You know, or is it better to sort of chip away at the margins and tax a little bit here, and there and try and massage and increase opportunity, which is basically the central case of most societies.
Now, or stopping people from being tax exiles abroad.
Look, this is...
Is that even possible?
Of course it's possible. Of course it's possible. You know, it's anything's possible.
Mm.
You know, but I come back to the difference in terms of responsibility of the rich, right? That in historic societies, the rich understood at a certain level that they were lucky, right? That this was actually a bit of luck.
Yeah.
And in order for them to maintain their luck, they had to give back to society.
Mm.
We have gone into this hyper, what they call neoliberal world, where the rich feel, and this comes back to this idea of meritocracy, that their money has been earned by them, for them, exclusively for them.
And they deserve it. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So in a way, the old aristocratic, we're fucking lucky to have it, and let's not rock the boat, is slightly more easy to fix than the meritocratic, I set up my own startup, I'm a tech billionaire, and now what I'm going to do is buy an island off the coast of New Zealand and hide there, right? Yeah. So it's all to do with changing the mindset. But that's why, John, I know you find it bizarre, it is interesting to go back to the ledgers in Florence, right? Because history gives you the great scope. Economic history gives you the great scope of ideas. So when, for example, we hear that Irish millennials are going to be the richest generation ever, of Irish people ever, then I think it's also important to inculcate in them a sense of social responsibility to the rest of us, to the rest of society. Because ultimately, if the only way of righting inequality is revolution, that would seem to be a much higher price to pay than simply taxing these guys at the margin, bringing their money back home and telling them that we're all in this, I know it sounds weird, but in some way together. And the thing about democracy, John, is it cannot exist with inequality indefinitely. So if you want to preserve democracy, which I think we do, you've got to address inequality at some form. We'll see you Tuesday.
Viva Revolution!
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.